Hello and welcome back to See You at the Podcast, the podcast where two unqualified football fans try to sound qualified to talk about football. Apologies to our listeners last week. I wasn't in the best form, but I'm in much better form now, as you might expect, considering the weekend's results. But someone who is always in good form is my wonderful co-host, Sean. Shawnee, how are you doing?
Well, yeah, in good form for the minute, but big week, you know? A loss on Thursday and a loss on Sunday changes United's season drastically. So my own form might completely dip as it has done with Arsenal.
Yeah, you guys have some big cup fixtures on the horizon. But yeah, I mean, we'll dive straight into it. Unai Emery back again trying to foil his former club, Aston Villa versus Arsenal. This had to be... To watch as a neutral, I don't know. I don't know if you watched this game or not, but I was not a neutral, so therefore I did not get to enjoy this game to the full extent of the football that went on. But from what I heard, this was a very enjoyable football match.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially when you're in, can you really be called a neutral when you're actively rooting for Arsenal to lose? But yeah, it was like Ollie Watkins scoring early on was kind of joyous. It was a surprise in many senses. Arsenal were caught reeling, but then they weren't really, because Saka just scores straight away. I don't know, for me the first stint kind of had a bit of a formulaicness to it, you know, you kind of expected Arsenal to get back into it after the first goal and then also the second, but it was then as time was drawing to a close on, it's like, are they going to drop more points? It's getting to the 90th minute. Martinez is he, you know, coming back to haunt his old club? And then quite the opposite occurred when Jorginho hit that shot. I was kind of in shock nearly, because I was like, oh, that's a great strike. And then when it ended up in the back of the net, I think my brain skipped a beat, because it like was like, oh, fantastic finish from Jorginho. But then I realized like there was brain lag. It's like, oh no, hang on, that was super ricochet off Martinez's head, which has a lot of sour, or what's it, just desserts in it, I think, for a player whose antics at the World Cup have come into scrutiny.
I think a lot of people enjoyed that. Even a lot of people that weren't even Arsenal fans enjoyed that happening to Emi Martinez. Emi Martinez has had a lot to say about Arsenal, despite the fact that he spent the guts of a decade at the club, or at least signed with the club. And yeah, for that to clatter off the crossbar and off his head and in, it took me a second to realize that it was a goal. Like, the ball was in the back of the net and I could see the players like running towards the corner, and then I kind of realized it, and then I started celebrating, obviously. And then when I celebrated and I saw the replays, and then it took me a few seconds again, and then it was just into maniacal laughter for a little while. And then you had the double bubble of him going up for the corner and that resulting in Arsenal's fourth goal, which was hilarious. Couple of questions for you as someone who's outside of here, right? Unai Emery came out after the game, slated Emi Martinez and said, keepers should not go up for corners. That's one. So I'm asking you, do you agree or disagree? Number two is, specifically Gabriel Agbonlahor, actually criticized Gabriel Martinelli for celebrating before he put the ball in the net. And number three, should Unai Emery be allowed to wear Gilai like that on television?
Number three first, no. What the hell was that, Gilai? No, thank you. Tim Sherwood's shit-stained attire or something akin to that was what I would describe Unai Emery's attempt at a gilet.
Does that count as a hand-me-down?
Well, look, Tim loved his gilet, but whatever shade of bronze, to be kind, Emery was wearing is a big no-no for me. I don't know if you recall Lopetegui wearing that brown turtleneck soon after Christmas for Wolves, which was also a big no-no.
I wonder, did he just find it? Like, did like Tim Sherwood leave it lying around Villa Park? And you just pick it up and put it
shocked.
On.
I might have seen a faded Villa logo on that, but no. Agbonlahor can feck off. Like, who gives a rat? Especially in the context of when the goal was. We've seen it happen many a time. And I think I think the whole celebrating before you've scored, was it Barkley? He'd done it successfully, I know, but did he do it again and miss, or was it Dele Alli or someone?
I think that was a spliced up clip that went viral. That wasn't real.
Oh, right.
I don't think
that happened. I was fairly sure he scored, but anyway.
Yeah, I think there was a goal, but then people edited it into like him hitting the post and going out. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, anyway, you take the risks and you accept them when you do something like that. I think Martinelli's so-called celebration was actually quite tame, because he kind of threw his arms out and then seemingly sort of panicked and went, you know what? No, actually, I need to finish this because Mikel's going to smack me in the head if I don't after the game. So, whatever. But the keeper thing is probably the most interesting thing. It had shades of, I don't know if you recall, Manuel Neuer playing in midfield for Germany against, was it Korea? Not the World Cup just gone, but the one before. That's what it reminded me of, because there's a time and a place for your keeper going up for a corner. Again, it's a risk to reward ratio, but when you're kind of a mid-table team with the game's lost, essentially, right? It's not like you're fighting for relegation. It's not like, look, you throw everything at it. It's kind of a game in the middle of the season. The only person you're doing that for is yourself, you know? And that's, it always seems to be keepers that are kind of the more manic sometimes, I think, with some of their attitudes. Pickford, Joe Hart spring to mind, even Dean Henderson's antics at times. So Emi Martinez was doing that for nobody but himself. When Alisson scored against West Brom, like, that was when Liverpool needed to score to get out of the Champions League spots. And Schmeichel doing it at certain times, like, it's such a rare occurrence, but it's only when you absolutely need, it's all or nothing, not when it's kind of like the game that it was against Arsenal, middle of the season, not much riding on it for Villa, but, you know, silly, I thought, for Martinez overall.
In fairness, he just scored one down the other end.
He was on form.
But, like,
you know what they say about strikers, you know, you only need one to go off your backside to get yourself back into form.
Yeah, broke his duck, as they say. As well, there's also a part of me that thinks, like, you've got nothing to lose. Like, you're not going to be fighting on goal difference toward the end of the season. Like, get in amongst it. Extra body up there. But what I do agree with is, like, if the coach has not permitted it, then you shouldn't do it. I think it's been well documented that Unai Emery and Emi Martinez have not got along since he's come in. And I think Emi Martinez just recently came out and said that he wanted to play Champions League football next year. So I think there's a bit of tension there. I think, you know, Emi Martinez is destined probably to be a Barcelona player or somewhere along those lines. Like, I think he's just, you know, that.
What
sort
makes
of person.
You say that?
I think Barcelona's a bag of cats. I think he'd fit in there. But it's like
from personal experience, I thought Jordi Alba was a complete pain in the arse last week with some of his accosting of the referee against Man United. So
yeah, but if you close your eyes, can you see Emi Martinez in a Barcelona shirt? Like, do you know what I mean?
I can, because but.
That's what I mean.
I think Emi Martinez has a classic case of big for your boots, to be honest.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, like, he definitely did not take getting told you're not as good as Bernd Leno very well. And I mean, Bernd Leno's having a great season, in fairness to him. And then he went off and obviously he won the World Cup. He's a world champion, but I mean, he's a world champion in the same team as Lionel Messi. So it's like, you know, I don't remember him doing anything particularly extraordinary in the...
Well, like, another world champion goalkeeper, Victor Valdez, like...
Yeah.
You wouldn't say he was...
You don't go Fernando Torres, David Villa, Victor Valdez. exactly. I think, people like Enzo Fernandez, Lionel Messi will be remembered a bit more fondly. Enough about him anyway, because he's annoying me. It was a great win. And I think the manner of the victory is almost as important as the victory in this instance. I think the fact that Arsenal were almost out for the count, like it was almost like waved off. I think if they'd have lost that game 2-1 to Aston Villa, you could kind of wave the white flag and go, oh, this is not good. This isn't really unhealthy. And after the Odegaard miss, when Odegaard missed that chance straight in front of goal, I was like, that's it. And I know it would have ended up 2-2 at that point. Still two drop points, but it was like, it felt like a knife in the chest when he missed that chance. I was like, oh my God, how are we going to recover? And then obviously the man that so many people slated coming into Arsenal, Jorginho, was the one who made the difference. And he had an incredible game as well. He played really, really well. I think the important thing to note is that 3 weeks ago, if this game was 3 weeks ago, that would have been Sambi Lokonga. So that's the difference that a decent transfer window makes. You also look at Leandro Trossard deputising for Martinelli, and a fresh Gabriel Martinelli coming into that game with about 20 minutes left to go made a hell of a difference too. So I think definitely you can see the effects of the transfer window here for Arsenal. The one thing that I wanted to sort of run by you, and you may have seen this knocking around a bit as well, is fouls on Bukayo Saka. There's a lot of them, but a lot of them don't get given. I think he's like 51st in the league for fouls against. Do you think that like certain players sort of are exempt from decisions because of the way that they play?
I think this is the way Saka
I know it's borderline referee talk, but I'm more so interested in
Like, of course, players of certain quality get hacked a bit, right? And you know, Grealish is known for winning fouls, but also I feel like Grealish, to his credit, actually does kind of put his body on the line in a sense to get them. Do you know what I mean? Like, to get some of these fouls, he gets kicked, he gets properly shoved and knocked around. I know Saka does too, but I don't know. I think it's just lots of great players get fouled off the park, or, you know, that's a classic old school method to get rid, you know, cancel out the advantage of a quality player is just hack them to bits. I think Saka should just, I don't think he's complaining over anything, but yeah, something like that it's nearly a sign of respect, and just keep on what he's doing because he's scoring great goals and he's playing a hell of a season. So, or as Souness said, you know, Kane's the only world-class player England have, so Saka just completely got forgotten about for some reason. And another fella who plays for Man United, actually. But anyway, let's not talk about maybe why. It's interesting that those two players who missed penalties at the Euros are having such fantastic seasons. Maybe they're better players than people gave them credit for. So, look, Saka probably gets kicked lumps out of, but yeah, brilliant player. And it's a perception thing. Grealish is known for winning fouls. Saka isn't, I guess. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, Mikel Arteta has been quite careful as well. In his speech, he said, like, you know, essentially the same thing as you. Like, Saka's brilliant. They're going to kick him. And that's the way it is. If we see anything untoward, we'll definitely get in touch with the PGMOL and make a point of it. But he's like, for now, I don't see anything untoward. I think part of that is also about protecting the player as well and not giving him a sort of inferiority or a targeting complex. You know, keeping the player's mind sharp and thinking, oh, you know, they're just going to kick me. Being like, no, you make them kick you, you know. And I'm sure, like, you know, you feel the same about Rashford. And, you know, Liverpool fans feel the same about Salah. And if you're a tricky winger who's going to do bits, essentially, for lack of a better term, you're probably going to get a few lumps kicked out of you in a game. But, yeah, great result for Arsenal. Health check on the title race. It's quite good again, I guess, considering City drew. I think there was a lot of, ringing of the bells after the City loss, but Arsenal are now back ahead on points with a game in hand. So still a long way to go. But with City playing in the Champions League now again. Arsenal have the clearer schedule, and hopefully Arsenal are back in form. Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think so. This is probably going to go weekly nearly, because City dropping points is pretty relevant here, and Arsenal are suddenly 2 points clear at the game in hand again. So we'll check back in with Arsenal soon enough. But where are we heading to next, on? Is it another part of London?
Yeah, we will try and give Arsenal a break at some point, but it's just that, like we were saying earlier, they just keep writing the stories. But let's head over to Chelsea, because fun. this almost gives me as much joy. Almost. But Chelsea are not doing so good. I mean, they're right in the middle of the table. It just seems as if Graham Potter, and I'm not saying that this is his fault, but Graham Potter just can't make all those pieces work to win a football match. Would you say?
It's tricky, this one, because I think we all know Graham Potter's a really good coach. How and ever, maybe this just wasn't the move for him, because he's been given so many expensive pieces to work with, but I don't think the thinking of what that team's meant to look like is joined up with him. It's just Chelsea kind of acquiring assets they feel will appreciate in value, rather than, you know, getting in the best young players early on 8-year contracts before anyone else, rather than going, Potter, what kind of way do you want to play? What kind of players do you need? It's more like, here you go, make this work. And I just don't think it's working. Maybe the players don't appreciate him because of his standing in the game, in a sense. You know, he's not a title winning or European. I'm sure he won the title with Ostersunds, but do you know what I mean? Players do pick up on those kinds of things. And it's just not clicking. It really isn't. And I would have said, give him time for a long time, but you're not really seeing any signs of life worth keeping him around. And I actually just saw, I can't stand over the quality of this, but apparently there was some talk about Pochettino behind his back, or, you know, as a backups recently. So I think it's only a matter of time before Potter gets the sack.
Yeah, I think Pochettino makes a lot of sense. The only thing is, though, is Pochettino is very heavy on personnel and what he wants. And I think part of Graham Potter's role at Chelsea is to accept what he's given and make something out of it. I'm not sure how much he has to do with the... Now, maybe I'm underselling his influence, but I'm not sure how much he has to do with the signings that are being brought into the club. A part of me thinks that there's no way that he was sitting there going, yeah, Enzo Fernandez, no matter the cost. You know what I mean? I don't think that's him, especially coming from his background at Brighton, where no matter the cost is an allergic term. I can imagine him looking with analysts to bring in players who might be a surprise, you know, who are not necessarily a surprise, but someone who can statistically do well, and then they can mold him into a Premier League player. You look at some of the players that they brought through in recent years. I mean, it's unbelievable what Brighton have done. Part of that's surely due to Potter, due to the coaching, but also, I mean, De Zerbi seems to be doing fine as well. Chelsea are trying to buy talent to develop, but talent that's a lot closer to being Champions League ready. And I'm not sure that you can do that. I'm not sure if that's possible on a grand scale. And obviously that's what they're trying to figure out, but there's no part of my brain that says this works. And that's not just under Potter, that's under anybody else. Maybe a long-standing expert like a Carlo Ancelotti, or somebody who is a tactical genius, you know, who can make stuff happen. But I just don't see it. I don't see it. And I think, I'd be surprised if Graham Potter saw it at the end or the rest of the season.
I think someone, I do think someone like Pochettino nearly makes a lot of sense with the personnel, because they are so young. You know, a lot of the good he did at Spurs was kind of bringing together a whole group early on, and they all developed together. And so, you know, if he maybe, the thing is, if he came in now, he'd be starting on the back foot in terms of, this is a squad that's clearly probably a bit not harmonized. You know, Aubameyang, we know about Aubameyang. I'm sure he's not being quiet about sitting on the bench or not even in the squad in some instances. And I completely understand. I don't think Chelsea should. I think they should have tried to release him, but isn't it UEFA rules meant he couldn't move clubs again because he'd already moved twice in the space of 6 months? So
yeah, he should have stayed at Barcelona.
But of course, Barcelona didn't want to keep him because Barcelona are mad, and I don't know why they even got him in the first place, even though he was semi-successful.
Yeah, he did quite well. But yeah, it's it's tough. Like, I just I can see Pochettino working, but I'm also like, you know, with the direction that Arsenal are pulling in at the moment, with the direction that Man United are pulling in at the moment, Man City, I'm sure, are going to have the rebuild of all rebuilds in the summer and bring in all sorts of bodies. Like, I don't fancy Chelsea's chances.
Well, Chelsea have to. Sorry, on. I just think Chelsea have to. You know, there's going to be more suffering with whoever the new manager may be. Even get, like, this Potter experiment clearly isn't working, but whoever comes in still going to need time as well. So, like, you're not going to. I wouldn't expect the kind. Do you know the way Tuchel came in and they won the Champions League a few months later? The levels, I don't think, are the same, because Lampard's nowhere near as good a manager as Potter was or is. And so there's no massive uplift, I would say, to be had here, given how eclectic the signings have been.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, I think the big transfer talk at the moment with Chelsea is Mason Mount on the way out. And I think, you know, the clubs floating around have been identified as Arsenal, Man United, Liverpool. Obviously Newcastle, I'm sure, will throw their hat in the ring as well. But I mean, that to me is indicative of where Chelsea are at as a club, because, like, he's a Chelsea boy. He's an academy product. It would be the same as Bukayo Saka leaving Arsenal for a rival, or Marcus Rashford leaving Man United for a rival. Obviously those two players are in immense form, as we mentioned right now, but it's that feeling that you have as a fan towards that player. Like, for Chelsea fans, that would be devastating to see Mason Mount in a Liverpool shirt, an Arsenal shirt, or a United shirt, would it not?
I don't think so. I don't know. I my opinion on the Chelsea fan base is probably not the kindest, but, you know, given how they were pining for Abramovich very quickly. But, and not to say all the Chelsea fans are the same, of course, but I don't know. I just don't think. Look, I'm going to be speaking in very broad strokes here about the Chelsea fan base, but they've clearly been so used to the win now methodology of the previous ownership group. The manager is changing all the time, a trophy nearly every two seasons, you know, because of the peaks and troughs of managerial change as frequently as they did. And I don't know if Mason Mount's established himself as that, you know, despite the assist in the Champions League final. He was going that way, but he's fallen foul of the Chelsea dysfunction of the moment, do you know? So I'm not sure there'll be this outpouring of, I'm sure some will be upset to see him go, but equally for him, he's a good player and his career is kind of, you know, he was an England international starter. He hasn't started as frequently for England in the last while. Things aren't going well for Chelsea. So for someone like him, it makes complete sense. He'd look great. I think he'd work great at Liverpool, given his qualities, actually, you know, in the Liverpool midfield. I'm not sure where he'd fit at Man United, but, you know, he's a quality player. You'd take him. I might be unfair here, Owen, but I kind of put him in the Joe Linton category of he's very good at running around. He's probably a bit more tactically astute and higher quality, but I feel like Mason Mount's a very willing runner, which may be unfair, but the type of player you'd love to have.
Yeah, I quite fancy him in that Granit Xhaka role on the Arsenal team. If I can say so.
Agent Jorginho, is that?
Yeah. Apparently Arsenal very much fancy Alexis McAllister in that position, is if you're to believe what you read. But hey, if Mason Mount's available, I wouldn't be crying over that one either. I feel like Mason Mount is one of those players that people go, oh, he's rubbish, just for no reason. Like, you know what I mean? But yeah, I think, but my point ultimately is, like, you know, when someone who is so indicative of what it means to be an academy player and come through and reach the top level goes like that and goes to a rival, it can hurt. It can hurt. Trust me. It hurts. Yeah, and I wonder just how badly Chelsea's image as a club will be, how badly damaged it will be by the time this experiment is either over or changes. But should we give some credit where credit's due as well? Because, I mean, you know, they were beaten fair and square, and they're beaten by a team down the very bottom end of the table. They're beaten by Southampton, more aptly beaten by James Ward-Prowse's prowess over a free kick. Pretty incredible, isn't it, his record?
Yeah, like, I feel like it's been a long time since we've had, you know, like, he's going to break Beckham's record, it seems, and I feel like it's been such a long time since we've had that kind of super specialist, you know, Eriksen, Henri, obviously, back in the day, you know, they all took free kicks, but who'd be the last, like, out-and-out specialist free kick taker you could think of on in the same vein as James Ward-Prowse?
Oh, like, I don't really know. Like, I think
I don't, like, know his record, but Morten
Gams Pedersen,
yeah, springs to mind.
Juninho,
yeah, maybe. Like, do you know, like, what I mean?
But it's like, you know, James Ward-Prowse will never be written up as, like, an incredible player, right? You know, like, he'll never be written up as one of the Premier League's all-time great midfielders. But what he will be written up as, one of the all-time great set piece takers. He's already up there, like. It's insane. And that's the, I think we did one of those squad builders before, and I was saying how I'd love James Ward-Prowse at Arsenal. I think this might have been the one that we did 2 years ago, and it was purely based on the based around the fact of, like, bring him on in, like, with 15 minutes left to go and try and draw free kicks. Let him have a few pops at goal. His conversion rate is insane. It's so good. He scores so many, and it's really put the cat amongst the pigeons now in the relegation fight, hasn't it? It's really made things difficult for some of the other teams in terms of their thought process going forward.
Yeah, like, the whole relegation battle is, you know, also, we'll get onto this a bit more later, but contextualized by Everton beating Leeds, like, you, and Bournemouth beating Wolves, like, you'd have written off Bournemouth and Southampton, but all of a sudden it's becoming a bit of a 5-6-way fight for three positions, you know, to avoid the three relegation spots. I think Southampton kind of just capitalized on Chelsea's dysfunction here. Like, I don't think they were particularly amazing in the game. It was just a kind of chaotic game that they came out on top of. Either way, I'm sure Southampton will sell a few players in the summer, even ones who just signed last summer, because they're young and promising. But maybe a final word on this in terms of James Ward-Prowse. I feel he should be at West Ham. You know, what I would consider, like, a steady Eddie mid-table team who might be in Europe every now and then. Like, Ward-Prowse plus Moyes seems like a match made in heaven, except when you take in the real fact that West Ham are also in the relegation dogfight. So, surprises there.
Yeah, we should really talk about West Ham too. I mean, West Ham are the only club down there that have stuck and haven't twisted. If I'm correct in saying that, they're the only ones who haven't changed their manager yet.
Yeah, they're you know, you have to go as high as as Aston Villa or something for the next team who haven't
Leicester.
Leicester, yeah, as the only team who haven't changed.
Interesting, because it's like, what's going on? Like, you know, I actually sort of think that it's not a bad idea to keep Moyes. Also, given the landscape of managers out there, and we spoke about this when it came to Leeds, And also, it's been proven to work as well with Nottingham Forest. So like, I don't really think they're wrong for sticking with Moyes. I don't know what someone else would come in and do with that squad. I don't think it's great. I think a lot of players are looking towards their next challenge, and I think this team is done in its current guise. I think they're going to have to make a lot of signings in the summer and roll over a little bit. I think the revelation of Souček and Soufal is over. Like, that was an amazing boost to them when it came in, because that worked way more than they thought it would. But now I think they're struggling for quality a little bit. They just have to make sure that they don't get relegated, and you would think that David Moyes has the tactical nous to do so.
He might do, but he also is predisposed to being quite a safety first manager, as seen by their approach to the Spurs game, and look how that went for them. They played three centre backs, two holding midfielder. You know, it was very defensive structure, which clearly just did not work for them. And I think the large problem, I think they should switch, to be honest, and, you know, get someone new, because you look at the players they signed last summer on, like you're saying, they need to rebuild this summer, but they started it. You know, they got Paqueta in for 60 million. They got Scamacca in, who was considered to be one of the most promising strikers around to a certain extent, who's available, I suppose, for not crazy money. And it's not working. It's not clicking. And they've kind of reverted to type and signed Danny Ings. Like, why? They had Scamacca. They have Antonio. What's Ings going to give you that those two won't? It's just, I think partially David Moyes' approach and method of management is getting on the player, grating on them. You know, like Bowen, Antonio and all these have gotten a lot of plaudits over the last few seasons, and it's worked well for them, but they're on the downward trajectory as a whole team right now, and I think they could really benefit from an injection of new blood, someone who will come in and perhaps liberate the attack somewhat, because you would say they have some quality players in there. So we've seen this before with Manchester United. You know, Man United had the record number of crosses without scoring a goal, and the way they are playing now seems eerily similar in terms of West Ham aren't creating much, they're not scoring much, and equally their defence is faltering. That they have to switch, because they're right in and amongst the relegation zone, and sticking with David Moyes is not gonna, does to me at least, does not seem to be working.
Yeah, like, oh, it's so tough, isn't it? Because like, what do you do, especially down there? Because like, one wrong step and you're through the trap door, and suddenly you find yourself going away to Luton. next year. Aren't Luton even in the Championship? Have I just done them
no service? Nathan Jones, infamous.
Of course. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's sort of an impossible task to call the relegation fight at the moment, and that sort of leads us on to Leeds as well, doesn't it? I mean, they have Javi Gracia now. I'm like, cool. Manager that's managed in the Premier League before, nice guy. Do you think he has the sauce to keep Leeds up?
I honestly don't know, because is it fair to judge a manager who's been sacked by Watford? Do you know, like, he kept them up twice and then eventually succumbed to, what's the ownership name for who owns, is it Pozzo or something? But anyway, he succumbed to the whims of the Watford ownership. And I was looking through his track record, and it doesn't fill one with a lot of hope, because, like, firstly, he was managing Qatar before this, and he's only ever seemingly done 1 or 2 year stints at any club. And whilst his Watford period, he kept them up and stuff. He's not known for being a relegation dogfighter. And whilst I think that Leeds squad has a lot of quality in it and just needs the right system around it and also, you know, emotional support to kind of G up the players to get up for this fight, because they're slipping and sliding down to the very bottom. It's good that he's in ahead of the Southampton game. And, you know, yeah, what's the name of the guy who's managing Southampton on the interim? Tebes or something? You know, he wore that turtleneck against Chelsea. That would make me believe he's going to be staying on full time. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about Javi Gracia's football. I read a thread on Twitter that kind of said he likes to play a 3-5-2 sometimes or a 4-4-2, which both seem quite defence-orientated systems to me. But maybe that's what Leeds need. Maybe Leeds just need to be solid at the back and play in the counter. They've got a lot of pacey attackers. But I think it's a confidence thing. Give the ball to Nanto and hope magic happens, because otherwise Leeds this has to work for Leeds, because I'd say if they do stay up, they will try again for Iriola or the Feyenoord coach, because they have ambitions. But they needed to get somebody, so they got somebody who was available. And even though he's not known for much more than that Watford stint, I'd say, in terms of the Premier League, it's a bit of, like, I don't think anyone can speak with any degree of certainty how this is going to go now. You know, if they got Sam Allardyce, you'd know what you were getting. But with Gracia, I'm not sure anyone knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's almost impossible, I think, to call who's going to go down at this stage, because just when you thought somebody was dead, they come back to life. God, yeah, it's so tough. It's so, so tough. Looking at it now, you kind of think Everton will have enough with Dyche and with their organisation, and they do have a bit of quality. Bournemouth, I worry about, of course. West Ham, I worry about for other reasons. Leeds, I worry about for other reasons. Southampton, I worry about for other reasons. Do you think it's safe to say that Wolves and up are sort of like okay in terms of their form, or like they're kind of, some of those teams are winning like more often?
I'm not sure about Wolves, because they lost to Bournemouth, and that kind of worries me. And even the fact that what you're saying about Everton, yes, they beat Leeds, but they also lost Liverpool and kind of were crap against Liverpool too. I'm not sure we can make any definitive calls on anybody. Even Leicester aren't that far clear of relegation. It seems like they'll have enough to get by. But as it stands, it's so tightly packed. It's literally, like, Leeds were safe. You know, they weren't playing well, but they were safe like 3 games ago. You know, safe enough, you know, as in had a few points clear of the relegation zone, and now they're second from bottom. Could go bottom if they lose to Southampton this weekend. So any sorts of mini runs, any like 2 wins out of 3, 1 win and a draw out of 3, you're suddenly shooting up the table, because nobody's been consistent down there. And whilst Dyche would be one you'd say could be consistent, Everton, you know, they beat Leeds with a brilliant goal from Seamus Coleman in mind. I'm sure Owen, you might have something to say about Messier's goalkeeping, but Everton don't score goals either. Like, they don't have. Like, I think I saw that Tarkowski is taking the most shots in the box at the minute, which doesn't fill one with confidence.
He did score against Arsenal.
yes, but he's a centre back and he shouldn't be your leading threat.
That's true. But hey, listen, I don't think you can look at stack grids and for a Sean Dyche team and call them conventional. I think they'll be anything but. I think expected ball hoofed into the air could be something that Opta could bring out for that very purpose. But yeah, I mean, like we said, we got to focus on some other stuff that we didn't get to focus on in previous weeks. Obviously we got Champions League tonight. There'll be more Champions League tomorrow night, or tonight if you're listening to this on a Wednesday. Europa League, big weekend for United and the Cup as well. On final note, are you feeling confident in both counts?
Slightly with... I dread to feel confident about any of this, because I've been bitten many a time recently owned by this Manchester United team. But on the back of the game against Barcelona, I think United should have beat them at the new Camp. I think with the injuries to Gavi and Pedri, Barcelona are going to be significantly weakened. Busquets is back, but how fit is he? United are going to have Martinez, Sabitzer, Casemiro all playing together for the first time. That looks promising. You know, aside from Rashford's form and stuff. And then also Sancho scored on the weekend. So I'm leaning toward the United win. I'd expect them, not expect them, but they seem to be in better form than Barca. Sunday's the big one, the big unknown. Who's going to be playing goals for Newcastle? It's quite funny to me that...
We should mention that, shouldn't we?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, do you want to have the honour, or shall I, if people don't already know?
Well, of course, I think everyone saw that Nick Pope got sent off against Liverpool. Owen, I can't believe I'm asking you this, but just given how the discourse online has been, red card for you?
Yeah.
Okay, good, because, like, there's people out there questioning it.
No, it's red card. It's a silly thing that he did. I don't think... It's so funny how a rush of blood to the head can cause such a domino effect. I mean, of course, they did lend Martin Dubravka to Man United, who is now cup tied. So he is out.
And if United win on Sunday, Dubravka gets a medal.
That is very funny.
For losing, so yeah.
Yeah, that's hilarious. He gets two. Oh no, he won't, because he won't play. He won't play in the other. And then obviously Nick Pope is out through suspension, because that suspension carries from the Premier League over to the Carabao Cup. They do have another keeper as well that's injured, don't they, I think?
Is Carl Darlow still on the books there? I don't know, but
I think
Carl
Darlow is injured. I think he has a broken hand or something, which leaves only one man to come in for the final. Realistically, I think, to come in for the final.
Well, there's some saying it's going to be... So, sorry, Lloris Karius of Liverpool infamy, let's say. Now, mm-hmm. Can I just say on this point, it's come out, everyone I think should know at this stage that he was actually concussed in that final. And quite a lot of what happened to him since is, you know, I do wish him well, and I hope
absolutely.
If United weren't playing Newcastle in the final, I would hope he'd have a stormer, but equally, I'm hoping he has a stinker mm-hmm. this Sunday.
Goes up for a corner towards the end. Emi Martinez, though.
If he can take all of the aspects of Emi Martinez's performance from this weekend and bring it into the final, that'd be great. Headed back, or backheader into the goal would be fantastic.
I think a Lloris Karius error in this game would maybe end football.
I do fear for him, because,
yeah,
you know, it's already... I think that could genuinely play into Eddie Howe's thinking about... starting Gillespie ahead of him. You know, you'd think Karius is, because he has played for Union Berlin, mm-hmm. and I think, was he at Cologne? He was in the Bundesliga for a bit before signing for Newcastle, so I think he was a second keeper most of the time there too.
Yeah.
But it's hard to call Sunday. I think Newcastle in general are not in good form, but they've also not had Bruno Guimaraes, who's back for the finals, so how much of an impact is that going to have? Obviously, mm-hmm. United will have Casemiro too, so that one's pretty tight. I think emotion's going to be heavily the fact, because United need a title or a trophy of some sort. It would be the first trophy for Newcastle in God knows how long. So it's a huge, huge game. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think a Carabao Cup has been this big in a long, long time.
It's also like just that image alone, and, you know, the comparison continues between like Arteta and Ten Hag, but it's that sort of thing of like, having that trophy in your hands gives you a bit more of a standing in terms of what you say. You're like, hey, look, we can win things. We can go back to front and we can win things. And I think that is extremely important for United, Carabao Cup or not. And I think, especially now that the pressure is not off with top four, but the distance is there. They've done quite well to make that a likelihood. So it's not as if, you know, you're even resting players for the run-in for the season. Like, there's no need to rest anybody. Gung-ho and try and bring home the silverware.
Yeah, and like, I'm not sure we should compare Arteta and Ten Hag at this stage, because arguably Ten Hag's done a lot better in his first season than Arteta, mm. bar the cup. But, you know,
I mean, arguably Arteta spent a lot more money, but anyway.
Well, who spent more last summer? Like,
we're not getting into this. We're not getting into this. We'll chat again next week when this final is over. And you have the small blockade of Barcelona, FC Barcelona, in the meantime as well. So it's going to be an eventful week, regardless of outcome for Manchester United. And I don't know if you'll be here next week or not, depending on the outcome. But until then, Sean, my friend, I'll see you out there somewhere.
I'll see you out there.